Right, there we go, and we've got the pointer here. thank you very much. Gosh, what a day, 2 days we've had, and thank you for the organisers. All just, again, everybody's been saying that, and it's absolutely true. Okay, so I'm going to talk about the Sonic Womb, which is in fact quite a long-term project, and as you will see from the list of participants beside myself, who are not here, quite a lot of collaborators. And that's Professor Eric Jeannot from the UCL Women's Health Unit, and Aude Thibault from our company, Sonic Womb Productions, Dan Scott, who was then a PhD student, and Pierre Guillet and Ganesh Diwan from UCL Bioengineering Department. So there's a lot of that's gone into this over several years. And the way I can frame it, I suppose, is about the limits of hearing, the limits of listening. And that's, so just to contextualise it with relation to the animal stuff, that how far does listening go? How far can we go with listening? And one place we don't usually go with listening is to what the baby hears inside its mother's womb before it's born, right? And that is an interesting area that I got into, not in a, oh, perhaps, a, well, it's, this is not working me.
I think
you're such a tap. What? Anyway, I'll do it manually. This, so I got into this in terms of the liminal auditory environments I've been investigating in Jamaica. And that's the popular culture of sound systems and how they work. And they are very intensive. And they're intensive in terms of the volume that we've got from these speakers. You see, they get idea of scale being as they're put up there. And the that is a lot of watts. Okay. And so the real aficionado is actually kind of try and climb in the bins, as we call them, on the bottom with earplugs in. Right, so that they can experience this sort of total immersion in sound. So I became very interested in how that happened, and I talked a lot to the engineers, who are the people that actually know how to do this stuff without damaging you, and that became it's still the subject of ongoing books. And the interesting thing, besides the volume, is how they split the frequencies, right, between the top, middle, and bottom. It's five frequency bands amplified separately, corresponding to the eight octaves of human hearing. And so frequencies became important, and splitting them, I think some people might remember that a particular album cover from Pink Floyd. And there's a sort of an illustration myself of the frequencies, with the red as the bass, kind of engulfing us. And there's another kind of a model. Or rather image of these sounds, which is completely individualist. There's no science there whatsoever. But there is science in this, which is a nautilus shell, which you remember the shape of, which is a logarithmic spiral, which of course the cochlea of the ear mimics, or it's the same mathematics. And so that got me into trying to lay out the frequency bands, not just in the red section there, which is what we can hear, but you can see that it goes faster and faster past X-rays and visual frequencies, and it goes longer and longer to 25 years, year of a generation. So that's what I'm trying to develop, is a vibrational theory which can hold together what we'd usually think of as corporeal, or usually think of as material, or indeed socio-cultural frequencies. And that all came out in this, a lot of that came out in my book, Sonic Bodies. And so I began to look at the body as a subject of and a generator of different frequencies. And there you have two traditions of doing this. The Indian, the Vedic tradition of the chakras, on the left, the centres of consciousness, which are entirely vibrational, and then the body as a mechanical object, which would be vibrated, in that case, by the truck, the Swedish truck going over uneven roads. They wanted to know what the damage to the driver would be. Okay, so there are different ways. So there's different traditions in which vibrations have been very important for the body. And so what I came to was an idea. That is an image of a big, large-scale project that's been going for many years, called the Visible Human Project, which is a sliced-up human in DigiSpace, right, for anatomy students to study. But I'm more interested in this young lady here, and that is, what I would say, a body in pleasure. right? She's a dance hall, you saw a dance hall gal, right? And the kind of, I'm interested in the affective nature of embodiment through through vibrations. Okay, so the intensive environment is not a socially shared one. In fact, it's the opposite of the place where we're all alone, where we've all come from, right? And that interest in the fetus in the womb is very, and it also affects the vagus nerve, the vibrations, and the sound system engineers are very conscious of what organs of your body they are vibrating with the tuning of the set, with all that vast volume and that frequency range, the vagus nerve. But the interest in the fetus as a site for auditory stimulation has been taken up in many cultures. The famous Leonardo one of the babe in the womb, looking at it. And this bit might be slightly less familiar. There's a Mesoamerican civilization called the Olmecs, right, about 2000 BC. Progenitors of the Aztecs and various other things, and they were obsessed with basically the fetus. Right? They did sculptures of the fetus, right? And there's, you've got some development of how the skull develops to show something of a similarity between what they were sculpting and as evidence that it might be a fetus. And the one theory, a recent book by a woman. called Karen Tate, is that there was the Mesoamerican civilization, the Olmecs, were not treating their corn with lime, right, which caused it to have physiological effects of miscarriages and premature births, right? And so that's one theory for why we should have a fetal sort of place, a special place in that culture for the fetus, right? Equally ancient, that is from the Mahabharata, where Abhimanyu overhears his father Arjuna discussing a battle plan, the Pandava battle plan, from his mother's womb, right? And that's picked up with Ian McEwan's novel, The Nutshell, much more recently. So he overhears the battle plan, which gives him, you know, the knowledge to win the battle. Except it's nicely narratively done that he doesn't hear the last step of the battle plan, right? So he has to use his own initiative there. So it's a nice narrative, a mixture. But the idea that there is life before birth, right? That what we're, because the fetus, as I'm going to tell you, for the last trimester, the last 3 months, has perfectly developed hearing, doesn't have vision. That it has touch and smell in a way inside the womb, but the hearing, so we're hearing the world 3 months before we're born. Well, I find that kind of a bit staggering, right? And one of the, well, really powerful things that showed that, a study that I found several years ago, right, is that babies cry differently according to the language group in which their mother has been, right? And so we're talking about quite subtle levels of intonation. This is the real kind of complex stuff that, you know, it is the first stuff, and that's the reversal that I want to sort of emphasize, that we're able to make distinctions with. And so, I mean, that is a very easy to read visualization of what the difference in the two and the two babies would be hearing. Okay, so from here, what we wanted to do. So the project went in two directions at this point. To say one is about actually what they're hearing, right? We had to establish that. And then the other is how what they're hearing, what is available for them to hear. There's a big difference, right? Because we're not getting to the subject telling them, I'm not a bat, or I'm trying to transpose ourselves into other animal forms. What is available to be heard, and then how we, as adults, not in the womb, can hear it, right? And so we made further team building, with my friend Eric the doctor, and this is not just a philosophical issue, it's also a clinical issue, because those the most affected by hearing is the children that are born prematurely, because they don't have the mother's womb, they don't have the mother's abdomen to protect them from the world. And so there is literally a big, serious clinical issue about babies being traumatized, premature babies being auditorily traumatized in the incubators, which are in the neonatal units. And that's, if you like, that's the medical direction that we're going in, ultimately to design an incubator which is not damaging for the premature baby. And we've measured the sounds in the present ones, and they are, you know, like the nurse will drop their car keys on top of, you know, the plastic cow, right? And so it's, you know, real decibel, damaging decibels, right? They're not aware of that. Okay, so part of the job of this research is to make the medical profession aware of the importance of sound. And physiologically, it's very important. It gives them, I think, 50-minute premature babies, and many contribute to development of psychological issues in later life. And that is clinical knowledge as in the present time. So we were trying to do something which is embracing an understanding of how the importance of sound for our consciousness and also in medical outcomes. Okay, so basically the mother's baby, profound effect on what is available for fetus to hear. And so what I'm going to just show you very briefly is the different kinds of sounds, and there are three different kinds of sounds that are available for the baby to hear in the womb. Right? And they're sort of what we call them three channels. Right? First of all, I mean, it's pretty obvious when you think about it, but it wasn't until we started thinking about it. There's the stomach noise and the heartbeat. Right? Which is you know, it's quite dominant, and the heartbeat, we know how important that is in terms of all kinds of socio-cultural kind of things. Then the second channel, so-called, is the external sounds of the world. Right? And that is literally filtered by the mother's body. Right? And that's what we're investigating, the filtering or the transfer effect of the mother's body. Oh my gosh, okay, right, on the sound. I'm going to have to spin up. And the third thing, which is very important, is the mother's voice, because that is transmitted not from the outside world, but down the spinal column. So that has a unique quality to it, which is easily distinguishable from other kinds of sounds. And so we got together with colleagues at UCL, the bioengineering, and we are now currently in building a computer model of the effects of the body. This is the auditory human of what goes on there. So we're comparing that with some tests on sheep carcasses as well, because that's the most anatomically similar. Right, and doing various tests to develop what they call the mesh adequate to describe the effects of the musculature, the bones, because each have different, we're building what they call phantoms, which are models for testing that. We're testing it against what happens in the sheep's thorax. And so we're trying to build up a scientific thing, because we can't possibly say, look, here's an incubator which is good for the premature baby, unless we know exactly what the baby is hearing, which is a task in itself taking several years. And so we did a whole series of experiments to test that out. And so basically, to cut a very complicated, well, not that complicated story, that we're playing the outside sound, which is sound bursts of every frequency, and then we get, this is rushing through it a bit, the filtering effect of the human body for the baby. Right, and so you can see this. It's basically the higher it is, the louder it is. You can see it's not a level filter. It's, I mean, you can imagine this as a graphic equalizer. The mother's body as a graphic equalizer, where the sliders, the knobs we've been talking about, have been adjusted. And so that's our fetal filter that we're trying to develop to be accurate. But what the thing is, it's not just what's available for the baby to hear, it's also how it is hearing, right? And the best way, if you want to hear what you heard in the womb, the best thing to do, I recommend, is listen to music underwater. Right, and this wet sounds, I don't actually know these guys, I've been to their session. They play music via transducers in the swimming pool, you're in the water, under the water, and you're hearing in a totally different way. Right? Number one, the baby and you underwater, the ears are no use, they're designed for air. The eardrum, it's in tympanic membrane, no use at all. It's your skull that you're hearing through. Right, with the bone conduction hearing being mentioned before. So that is interesting in itself. And so immediately, if you don't have your ears, you haven't got stereo listening, right? You've got mono listening, right? It's a mono listening which has a bigger frequency range because water carries sound broader waves than air. It's also a bigger frequency range. It's a faster transmission through water because it's a denser medium. But the really interesting thing I find is that you're not making the differentiations, right, that we do in the world between subject and object, because you can't tell whether the sound's coming from the outside or the inside, right? And if you just try this out, okay, I'm giving you my interpretation of it. If you try that, I'd be surprised if you found a lot different from that. And so this whole idea of an ego, a sonic ego, right, is a different kind of way of being in the world in terms of an understanding of identity, of epistemology, and there's some key French philosophical thinking about that, and Bracket Etanger, the work on the matrixial, Lucy Irigaray, and Kristeva have all been contributing to you know the subject Bracket Etanger calls it the woman as more than one and less than two. I've got a minute to go. Right. Okay. And so what we did. So that was what's available for the baby to hear. But the key thing, which is what you're not going to hear now, is. Okay, so we need a vehicle for hearing that. And so I teamed up, in fact, with a Goldsmiths graduate, and he had been designing for many years, this is one of the fortuitous moments, these pods, which he calls an orb. So this is in a barn in Essex, and I designed this and put a whole sound set of equipment in this womb-like pod, right, so that we could have a listen to in the way that the baby hears. And of course, it's not just auditory. We're talking about transducers under the seat, right? And vibrations through your bum and the back of your legs, right? We're talking the whole inner shell of that pod, right, was transducer driven, right? And then we had a couple of normal speakers as well. So that's a full on similar to or stepping towards the kind of listening experience. And then we took this to Switzerland. We had a backer who transported this pod thing in the back of a truck, and we went down there, and we had 200 people going through that over a couple of days, right? So we had a soundtrack in there which took them into the sound from the outside normal type sounds to the inside sounds, and some of their experiences, right? I can mention that perhaps after the break, were very, very moving, what they got out of it. And that's a sonic womb orb, and there it is in all its beauty. Isn't that lovely? Right? Because about visuals and sound working together, you've got a kind of womb-like, visually looking thing, and that sets up you to understand the sonic experience. And so that's one sort of platform for listening to it. And also, because going back to the sound systems, my last point, want to share that experience. Right, not just to be singular as we are in the womb. And so I've been working on a larger scale. And so we have a facility called SIML, which is a Sonic Immersive Media Lab, there with this image piece I did as well, which has a 12.2 sound system. So you can get that immersive thing, but you're shared with others. And so the current plan is to do a basically immersive documentary, which is dealing with the images about the fetus, but to give an immersive, intensive sonic experience as well. Thank you very much.